computer. Welcome. Zen Talk number 41 has since commenced, and Millie's starting off with a bang. Millie, are you there?
Yeah, I am. I figure I'll get my question in first, maybe before we get to some of the heavier topics.
Please.
Okay, so forgive me if you guys have talked about this before, but my question is about chores, allowances, and family meetings.
Sure.
Have we talked about this? I feel like maybe.
Okay. Well,
So here's the situation. So we have a daughter who's 11 and boys who are 6 and a half. Twin boys that are 6 and a half. And I feel like, at least with our daughter, we've missed this huge opportunity to teach her about responsibility through chores. So she was 5 when our twin boys arrived. And as you can imagine, the early days were just crazy. And I feel like we've been living in this state of triage. You know, we just have to stop the blood flow or, you know, put out fires. And we didn't spend our energy on putting down solid practices or habits, right, in place, like doing chores. And so I feel some guilt around doing that, but okay, I know it's not too late. But now at 11, motivating her to start now is really hard. So I wonder if you have any words of advice for our situation with beginning chores for an older child, and to help her and our boys understand really the importance of responsibility. So that's about chores. Shall I ask all my questions?
Yeah, do them all.
About allowance and family meetings, because they're sort of all tied. Okay, so same thing with allowances. Is that, I mean, I know it's different with every family, but I feel like, okay, you know, she could be getting an allowance, and she should have been getting an allowance. We haven't started that yet, and she's already 11. So same thing, same situation with the chores, is that we're just late to the game on this. So I'm in the camp of the not having allowances tied to chores. And explaining that, you know, you're a member of this family, this community, and so we all have responsibilities. I don't want to be picking up your toys just like you don't want to, but this is what we do. And you don't get paid for them, because this is just what we do. So one question about allowances is, how have you guys maybe defined chores versus the jobs that they might earn money for? Okay. And I wonder when did you start allowances for your girls? Okay. So my last question then is about family meetings. We started them over a year ago, and I have to say though, we didn't stay consistent with them. We tried to do them weekly, and then of course life got in the way and my dad got sick and all this. So you have family meetings, and how often do you have them? We would like to tie receiving your allowances with attending the family meeting. Do you know what I mean? Like, you show up at the family meeting, that's when you collect your allowances. That was a suggestion I was given at one point, and I like that, because then you have to show up, then that's when you collect your allowance. I mean, not that our 6-year-old boys can't show up, you know, but I'm thinking, you know, later on, setting it up for when they're all teens, right? So hopefully you got all those questions I have. So it's chores, allowances, and family meetings.
Okay, awesome. I'm going to mute you, and then I'm going to jump in, and my sweetie's going to jump in after me. First of all, there's no right answer. Everybody has different views on chores and allowances and family meetings. Every family is different, so you got to figure out what's for yourself. The only thing that I could tell you that we do is I toyed with the allowance thing, and it just didn't feel right to Kathy and I for, you know, clean the kitchen and you'll, you know, do this, this, and this, and you'll get $2 at the end of the week or $12 or whatever it is. There are certain things that you need to do that you're part of this family, and with that comes responsibility, which means cleaning up after yourself or taking the things that are on the stairs up the stairs, or helping to put the dishes away after kitchen. These are all things that there's no carrot. It's just the way, and when I say carrot, I mean allowance. There's no money attached to those activities. But there are times when, like, I'll be like, all right, I got to clean out the garage today, and it's kind of a bigger deal. who wants to help me clean out the garage? And I'll pay whatever, $5 an hour or something like that. And so for the big stuff, I invite them if they want to help me, and then they get their money at the end right away. Actually, we use the FAMZU thing, so it makes it easy. We actually transfer money back and forth to our debit cards through FAMZU through my phone. So it makes it really easy. But most of the time, my daughters don't have much interest in doing the big stuff with me, which means that they don't have sometimes the money to do it. Which now the thing that drives me nuts is sometimes they get money for birthdays and things like that. And I wish I would have done a better job saying, hey, the money that you are gifted goes to the college fund or saving up for an iPad or something like that. You can't use the money from Aunt Peg to go buy a bunch of candy at the store. But sometimes I pull that card, sometimes I don't. So it is a little bit tricky. So because there's times when they want to go do stuff with their friends, and if they ask me for money, I'm not going to give it to them. Like when they leave this house, and you know, Millie, your daughter's 11, our daughters are, our older ones are 15 and 13. So it's a little bit different. So the value of money is different as they get older. A 15-year-old has a much different relationship with money than my 11-year-old. Like Skylar doesn't really care that much about money yet. She
Paris
will.
Money.
Yeah, she's saving. She has a jar for when she wants to go to Paris and things like that. So,
and I'm just going to stop you right sure. there just for a second. Then you can continue on that path. But he's saying she doesn't care about money, yet she's saved $400.
Right.
So of course she cares about money, but it looks differently than the way Todd cares about money.
Right.
So,
well, and that's not earned money. That is gifted money. It's, she's not doing any chores. We're talking about chores
correct.
Here.
You're right. She's not doing any chores. But it is money that she's asked for her birthday that she hasn't spent.
Yeah.
And that's been over the course of 3 years.
Yes. She sets it aside. So that's the one thing about, so we don't do allowances. So my quick answer is, we don't do allowances. Like you don't get, just get money for being in the family. You have certain expectations in the house, and you don't get any money as a result of that. The special projects like cleaning out the mudroom or cleaning up the basement, which are, you know, but when you're cleaning up after yourself, like at the kitchen table, like, all right, me and mom are going to sit here and you guys are going to take all the dishes in because we prepared the meal and all that. So that's allowances. And like I said, there's no right answer. It's not like I'm right and anybody who gives allowances is wrong. It just doesn't feel right to me. That doesn't mean that you're not teaching your kids wonderful lessons while giving them an allowance for doing certain activities. The family meetings is tricky too, because it ebbs and flows. Like this summer we had our version of a family meeting out in the backyard every week for like 5 or 6 weeks. Yeah. And just in the last few, we've kind of fallen off that, and we'll get back to it when it feels right. So I don't know.
Yeah. So a few thoughts. I was thinking about what I was looking up while Todd was talking was Gretchen Rubin's four tendencies, which some of you may know what her four tendencies are. I think we've talked about them on the show before, but there's different personality types. There's the questioner, which is what I am, the rebel, the obliger, and the upholder, which is what Todd is. And again, we'll put this in the show notes so you can read about this. The reason that I'm pulling this up is I think we have to remember how we motivate people. And there is ways that we're motivated, or then there's ways that as parents we think our children should be motivated because we have this voice in our head of this is what children should do. And then there's the way that human beings are actually motivated. There's like, you know, do the soul to soul thing and take the parenting out of it. How do we motivate kids? And when I say motivate, I don't mean to like excel. I just mean, how do we get them involved in what's going on in the home? And I think the way that has been, and like Todd said, this isn't like, we don't have like some plan that we're going to write a book about where it's been so perfect. But I think what's worked in our house is what you already said, Millie, which is we all live here and this is just what we do. There's no like, I don't in the morning have a list and say, you're going to do these things. But when it's time to set the table, Skylar, come set the table. When it's time to clean up the stairs, pick up your stuff on the stairs. When someone drops something, that's yours to clean up. You know, like I say things like, you left this out and you've left this out for 2 days, but that's not fair to me because that's actually not mine. And I'm very literal. Like I'm not using some Jedi mind trick. I'm not trying to be a parent. I'm trying to actually say, you know, when, and my youngest is the one who does it the most. She does like a huge slime thing. You know, she makes slime on the counter and then she's like, see ya, I'm going to go watch Friends. And then I'm like, now wait a second. Everything you got out here, you got, I don't do the, you should clean up or you should know better. Because again, the reason I got out the tendencies is that doesn't motivate someone. It makes them defensive. I try to approach her like a human being, like, now wait a second, you got all this out, but I'm supposed to put this away? That doesn't make any sense to me. You know, and I say things like that, not in a, and if you don't do it, you can't go out tonight. But like, this is just what people do. You get it out, you clean it up. Now, the thing is, it's interesting is I sometimes help. I'm not there to like teach a lesson. I'm a human being. Oh, you need paper towels? Oh, here you go. Okay, I'll put that one in the mudroom. Now, I know that doesn't sound like chores. But what I'm trying to differentiate is what you really want to teach Millie is a sense of responsibility and a sense of ownership in the home. And some people can do that through, like in the summer, we're more specific about chores. Like you're in charge of the bathroom because the summer is so different because our girls aren't so busy. So, you know, one girl is in charge of the yard, one girl is in charge of the bathroom, one girl's, and that's just, we just rotate that. During the school year, it's a little more like, do your thing, pick up your stuff. When it's a family thing, you participate. If it's your stuff, take it upstairs. And it's a little more about responsibility, part for the whole and part for yourself. And like Todd said, we've never attached money to that. The expectation is just there. So you guys are probably wondering, how do our kids get money then if they want to go out to eat with a friend or something? A lot of times I give it to them. Like, you know, a lot of times, but I also only give them a certain amount. Or, you know, oh, you're going out to breakfast. Okay, I have $5. You're going to have to eat within $5. Like, it's not, you know, can I give you 40 so you can buy everybody lunch? Like, sometimes, you know, it is, here's some money for that. But my children, you know, they go to the mall with their friends. They don't shop. Like, they don't have money to buy random things. They don't, you know, like, we have family and they have friends who like come home with something from the mall every time they go. My children have never grown up that way. Not because I've told them that's bad, but because they don't have money to do that kind of thing.
Well, in regards to chores, like, and sometimes you have to pick your battles. Yesterday morning, one of our girls had a tough morning. She woke up grumpy and all that, and she made herself cereal. And I said, listen, clean up after yourself and all that. She said, I will. And then I noticed that she didn't, and she was leaving for school. And I had a choice. I'm like, am I going to drop the hammer and say, no, you must clean this up before you leave for school, or I can just do it myself. Yesterday, I did it myself. Maybe it's because I had an extra time. Maybe it's because I didn't want her to get into a fight the minute that she walks out the door for school, but I just cleaned it up. There's other mornings where I just feel like, nope, this is your responsibility. We've talked about this. So I think the bottom line is Kathy and I don't have very many hard and fast rules with anything. There's times when we say, nope, you got to do this before you do that. And there's other times where we kind of let them off the hook and we throw them 10 bucks to go to lunch.
Well, and I was just going to say an example of the middle road of that is 2 days prior to that, my daughter had cereal and she had the cereal out and her bowl and then milk. And we had, Todd went to Costco or something, got this huge heavy milk. And I said, you know what? You haven't put your stuff away yet. I'll do the milk because it's heavy. You do the rest. And you know, I know that there's some parents who say, you're teaching her that you're going to do it for her. I'm actually not doing it for her. I'm supporting her. I'm reminding her. She still needs to do this part. And here's the throwback, you guys. They help me then too. Do you see what I mean? I'm doing something and they're like, oh, I'll take this, Mom. Or I'm, you know, making my bed and they're like, oh, let me get on the other side and help you. So we have to remember what we're teaching. A lot of times we get very focused on, I need to teach my girls or I need to teach my children how to do this. Therefore, I'm going to be kind of a hard ass about it. And I'm not going to, there's no room. You know, I remember even when I used to work at the hospital at Children's Memorial here in Chicago, part of our rule was because we used a lot of behavioral therapy and behavioral theory was, don't move an inch. Don't budge an inch. And again, looking back on that as someone who I was doing that with children, it doesn't make any sense now that I'm a parent. It's like not, there's life isn't like that. And what happens when you're like, this is going to be the way it is no matter what, is there's no human component. It's just about my thoughts. This is what it's going to look like. Now, when I say that, I think there's a middle ground, Millie, and everybody else. Like Todd said, I don't think there's anything wrong with saying you're always responsible for the stairs, or you're always responsible for bringing in the mail, or you're always responsible for this. This is yours. This is your ownership. And if the mail isn't here, then I know that you haven't done the thing that's yours. And you can think of that as a chore. And then at the same time, also bring her in on the community. You know, we're in a village. You're going to play a role in this. But I don't think in any way you've missed any boat. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's like, oh, if she would have learned this at 7, then she'd be happy about it. I don't think any kid is like, give me a chore. Like, no, it doesn't matter how old they are. I think that her being 11 is actually a perfect time, because she actually has the brain development and the maturity and the acknowledgement that it's not just about her, that she can actually participate. And then, as we always talk about, it's a lot about tone. Are we pissed off when we're asking them to do it? Are we saying, this is just what we do, which is kind of always my tone. This is not negotiation. I'm not angry with you, but this is just what we do. And then being supportive and helpful and back and forth, or are we like stressed that they're not learning responsibility? Because this is the last thing I'll say. Like Todd just said, you know, Skylar doesn't really care about money. And I'm thinking to myself, oh my gosh, she's my child who saved $400. Of course she has. Use that same example with a lot of times we say, I'm not teaching my child any responsibility. Yet every morning they're waking up, putting on their clothes, filling their backpack with stuff, making their lunch, because our children do make their own lunches, getting to a bus stop, going to school, participating, coming home, going to their event. That's a lot of responsibility. So to think that they aren't learning responsibility is not the case. Like, we have to kind of get a different perspective on, wow, they actually do a lot. Now, they may push back on it sometimes. I'm not saying that they never complain. But when I look at my girls, all three of them, their day right now, they're having to carry a lot emotionally, physically, mentally, and I don't feel like they need to come home and then I need to say, okay, now I'm going to teach you responsibility. It's like there's a blend in there.
So one other thing, I just moved off the screen, but who was it? Kelsey wanted to know if we pay JC to babysit. And that's a great question.
Oh, good question.
JC's 15. She's been babysitting since she was 13, I guess. Uh-huh. I don't know. The only time we pay her is if it's going to be a major inconvenience in her world.
Correct.
So if it's Friday night and she might go out with friends, but she and I have a date set up, we'll pay her. But if it's, hey, me, Skylar's getting to the point where she can stay home by herself for a little while, but let's just say that she was 7 and not 11. If it's just within the normal course of the day and not a real big inconvenience, then no, we don't pay. And actually, I don't know the last time we paid our kids.
No, the last time I paid her was about 3 weeks ago when Todd and I went out and she canceled plans to stay home with her sisters. And I said, I will definitely pay you for this time because you not only are missing this, but you know, you're staying home. And when I got home, she said, don't worry about it. And I was like, no, I wasn't like, oh good, you don't want to be paid. I was like, no, I said I would. And I gave her $25 and she was really appreciative. You know, it was, and that's the thing is like, again, it's that soul to soul thing with our kids. Like, we're not always in teacher mode. You know, sometimes it's just human to human. Like I said, I'd pay you and I'm going to pay you. But that, like Todd said, that happens not that frequently because we come and go a lot now. And I'm not like, JC, are you in charge? Like everybody's kind of got their own.
So I'm pasting three different podcasts we did in regards to money. One is, I don't know what the names of them are, but they're in your show notes. They'll be in your show notes. One is specifically the interview we did with Bill from FamZoo, which talks a little bit about the mechanics of how you can teach your kids money through debit cards and things like that, which we've done. And the other two are just our relationship with money. I want to go back to Millie one more time.
Can I say one more thing?
Sure.
And then to Millie about the family meetings, Millie, it's the only thing I didn't comment on. I think it's similar to seeing, like Todd said, we used to, all summer we did meetings in the backyard. We haven't done that much, but we've done a pretty good job of having dinner together about three times a week. And it's been a nice conversation where we've kind of been able to, not every time, but like kind of get a structure of our week down and talk through some things. And again, then it's not so much like, because whenever Todd says family meeting, my children run away. I don't know if you guys have that, but that's a four tendencies thing. Is we are, the rebel is going to be like, get me the hell out of here. The questioner, which is me, I'm going to be like, do we really need a family meeting? You know, the obliger and the is going to show up no matter what.
Do we, have we done a podcast on the four tendencies?
Yeah, it's in there
somewhere. I'll see if I can find it.
But it's kind of like when we say family meeting, and I like your idea of maybe giving money, maybe they'll be influenced, but it'll kind of be like, they'll be like, give me my money.
Yeah.
You know, like, are they getting anything out of
right.
that
can
moment?
Can I go now?
Can you blend family meeting into dinner?
Right.
Somewhere.
All right. Millie, we said a lot. What do you think?
Yeah, sorry.
Yeah, yeah. Great idea about maybe looking into Gretchen Rubin's four tendencies to see how I can adjust my requests or how, you know, teaching them these life skill maybe through what they might, how they might listen. So my follow-up that I just typed up in here was, what do you say when, you know, when they say, I don't want to, or I don't feel like it, which is what I hear all the time when I ask them to do something. Do you say, oh, okay, well, when are you going to do it? When are you going to do it? You know, if it's something that it's their chore, and I get what Todd says, you have to look at the moment. If it's, you know, they're running out the door and they're grumpy, you know, I might just do it for them. I've done that. But if they just maybe consistently say, I don't want to do it, what do you say?
Yes.
I could say, you know what, sometimes I don't want to do some of those things that I do for you too. I mean, I have said that. Mm-hmm. I don't really feel like driving you to your gymnastics class that you love. Mm-hmm. You know, because I'm just really tired right now. But yeah. I do it because it's my responsibility.
That's right. That you just answered your own question. And then again, when it is about, you know, for a second, just so it's, when it is, it's all about tone, because when the girls say to me, I don't want to do that, or, oh, I don't want to do that, I say, you know what? I get it. There's a lot of things around the house I don't want to do either. The only slight tweak to what you said, and I think you were just giving an example, it's not that you really say this, but instead of, I don't want to do this for you, they're really not doing anything for you, meaning you can say, we're in this together. I don't want to be doing this laundry. You don't want to be doing that, but we all do it together. We're a team. Because if you set up, well, I don't want to drive you and they don't want it, then you're doing this again. So it's like, instead it's, I hear you. The laundry this morning sucked and I had to clean the kitchen and I feel you, but it's what we do. Mm-hmm. And I occasionally I say things like, when are you going to do that? And Cameron's pretty good about saying, Mom, I will do this today. Can you just give me an hour to decompress or when I get home? And she does eventually do it.
One thing we forget as parents is, and this maybe is stems from my childhood, I just remember being told what to do, when
all
to do
the time,
it.
Yeah.
And it's usually because I'm already annoyed or pissed and I'll say, okay, time to go clean your room. It'd be so much easier to go to that kid earlier that day saying, one of the things I need you to do today is I need you to clean your room. But we as parents say, you have to do it on my schedule, how I would do it. And we don't leave any room for them to kind of take any ownership over it all. So anyways.
And one slight tweak to Todd's words. And again, this is just about energy. Not one thing I need you to do today, but one thing that needs to get done today. Mm-hmm. Because then it's ownership to them. I think I told you guys a story last time we were on Zen Talk about my yoga teacher who I love, but about how we'll be in plank and she'll say, do this plank for me. And I'm like, I don't want to do a plank for you. I want to do a plank for me. And so when she's like, we're going to hold this plank together, I'm like, I'm in it. But when she's like, now just hold it a little longer for me, I'm like, you know, I want to like be like, I don't want to hold this plank for you.
Sweetie.
I did. I just flipped.
Sweetie.
What?
You just did the bad
thing. I did. But that's how I feel inside. So that's how I relate to my children. Whenever I'm saying, now I need you to do something for me. I'm going to need you to clean these stairs for me. They have the same feeling that I do when a yoga teacher tells me to hold plank. Instead, it's at some point this weekend, this needs to get done. This is what needs to happen this weekend. And then it's like, it's subtle, it's slight. And I'm not saying it'll magically work. It's just, you'll even feel better about saying it. Mm. You know what I mean? Like, because a lot of this is, again, taking responsibility for the energy we bring instead of, I need you to do this for me. And then they say, I don't want to, then we take offense because you don't want to do this for me. But if it's instead, this needs to get done this weekend, I don't want to. I know we all got to do our things this weekend, you know, and then see what happens then. It subtle shifts change everything. But I don't have guarantees. It's just work in that system.
Sweetie, we want guarantees.
I know. I don't have any.
You know what Karen said?
What?
I think Karen's painting. I see her. I don't know what happened to her video, but it looked like she was painting, which I think
is a picture of you?
Really productive.
Picture of us?
She says, I follow Kathy's first this, then that.
Uh-huh. I say that all the time.
I didn't know you had that it was Sweetie's first this. Did you do that? All right.
It's mine. Well, even if we don't say literally the sentence first this, then that, it's you can totally go watch Friends. Just bring this upstairs first. First this. Then that, so instead of no, yes, you can watch a show, just get that upstairs and then you can watch the show.
And it's a broken record. And it's a broken record of what at least I say on Team Zen, which is what energy are you bringing to it? It's not what you're saying, it's how you're saying it.
Always.
Always.
That's the thing is like, there's so many different ways to communicate. And instead of my child doesn't want, and Millie didn't say this, but instead of my child doesn't want to do chores, it's how do I talk about chores or even not even use the word chores, Millie? Like, I don't know what energy you feel with that word and everyone will have a different perspective. But for me, chores makes me go, ah. Mm. Instead, it's responsibilities or yours. You know, you're in charge of mail. You get to do that. You know, our children would be so happy that they're in charge of mail.
Well, and you know, I was about to go down another path, but I'm not going to. I'm going to read a question and then we're going to go to Dawn after that.
Okay.
Here's from one of our teammates. How do parents determine when it's time for some professional help in reconnecting with their child? As you may know, I've been in counseling most of the year for personal self-worth related issues, as specifically related to how I am parenting in order to improve my relationships with my kids. My husband recently also began separate counseling 1 month ago for similar reasons. Our eldest son is disconnected from us. And while I am better at putting certain practices into place to improve our relationship, his trust in me and my husband is lacking. I am considering family therapy at this point, not because I feel the issue is his, but more so he feels he has a safe place to let us know what is going on with him and how exactly he feels about us. We are aware that the current relationship is in place due to how we parented him to this point. Is this a good idea? I don't think it is something that will work immediately, as he works hard to maintain his I don't care persona, and I expect a challenge. My husband is in agreement if I feel we should take this step. Thoughts? So I think the question is, when is it time to give my son some support? That's what I feel like is the question.
But not necessarily, when I say that, I don't mean that it necessarily needs to be a therapist, but it's funny because I was kind of trying to read over Todd's shoulder.
I don't know how old he is.
I know. I don't know how old he is, but even... you know, and again, I'm not doing this to critique the writing, but even our eldest son is feeling disconnected from us. And I would change that sentence to our eldest son is feeling disconnected rather than he's disconnecting from you. He's feeling disconnected. And then that is obviously, creating some challenges with trust. And she's considering a family therapist. I mean, there's never a bad time for that. So he has a safe place, and it says, you know, I'm considering family therapy at this point, not because I feel like the issue is his. And I would say, of course not. Whenever there's disconnection, it's a family, it's a dynamic of the family. And even though we may say, but they're the ones with the problem, part of the reason people have problems is because of the way the family operates. And so a lot of times when we're like, and she said this, but when we're like, well, we're all going to go to therapy for this kid, it's therapy because this kid is lighting the fire, sending the signal that there's something not working within the family. And again, that may mean that that child actually does need more support or that it is their issues that are arising. I'm not saying to practice blaming ourselves, but in a family unit, we're all in this together. And it's never just one person's problem or one child's issue. We're a unit. And so we figure out how to function as a unit, even if that means we have to learn new skills, because we may have certain set of skills for two of our kids. And actually, this just happened this summer. We had to learn some new skills with our youngest. So we've had these parenting skills with our oldest two that have seemed to work pretty effectively. And we're like humming along. And then our youngest.
And then one of your kids throws you a curveball.
Yeah. And then one of your children is like, this isn't working for me. And we're like,
nice try, mom and dad.
And so we had to learn how to know her better and how to recognize maybe some of the things we were doing for the other two wasn't working for her. So it's not she's the problem. We're going to keep doing what we're doing. It's if this isn't working for her, then there's a dynamic in the home. And then that kind of throws everything up in the air because then we had to kind of recognize how we made sure we spent time with the other two. And again, these things may feel traumatic or overwhelming, but actually that's what intimacy is. Intimacy is the willingness to keep looking at ourselves and reconnecting to our kids in a way they can feel it. So to me, it's the most important thing in the world. Even if I have to put other things on the sideline, or even if we don't get to do a few things or we have to cancel a few things, it's the only thing that matters. And that can be difficult though, because we want life to keep humming along. We're like, we don't want to look at this. The real question she's looking for is, would this be a good idea to like have some kind of intervention? Always, as long as the commentary about it is not, you need help, we're going to get you the help you need. But listen, we don't feel like we know how to communicate in a way that you can feel us. Do you think we could work together, maybe with a therapist, so you feel like you can hear us and we feel like you can hear you? Do you see what the difference?
My favorite part about this is that the mom is already getting some professional
support. She's getting her own support.
Yep. Dad, I think, is also.
It's awesome.
So what I like about it is because a lot of times parents will be like, My kid's got issues. I got to get him to a therapist, and they will not look in the mirror and look at themselves. This mom and this dad are already walking through it. So, you know, in my very business left brain, what am I, left brain or right brain?
You are left brain.
In my left brain perception is a cost benefit analysis. Like, what is the, I think everybody should have a coach or a therapist, or maybe if you're not into that, a best friend where you can like share stuff, not with your family member, not with your partner. There is some objectivity that is, I think, required for healing and growth. And I love the fact that she's thinking about doing this. So the costs really are the time that it takes to go to a therapist.
Money.
The money it costs. And maybe, even though there is no stigma from my behalf, like there's that part in the Parenthood, the movie Parenthood, Kevin is a young boy who struggles with anxiety. He said, how come I'm seeing a therapist? Mm-hmm. And I think today it's so much more accepted. Mm-hmm. That's a movie that's 20 years old.
And there's therapy, and then there's, you know, getting together, talking through, you know, having like family meetings, not calling them family meetings, or there's let's read this book together, or there's just the opportunities for a different kind of connection is like, it's so vast. There's so much. And the only reason that I always say, sure, go to a therapist is sometimes the therapist is the best person for these resources. Like we don't need to go, you know, when we think therapist, sometimes we envision ourselves going every week on the couch. You don't have to do that. You can see a therapist once if you want. You can go every other week. You can go once a month. You can go, you don't have to be a slave to a schedule of what it means to see a therapist. You could go see a family therapist once and say, do you have some resources or references? And if they're a good therapist and they're not just trying to get you to be a regular client, they're like, just come back when you feel you need me.
And they have different types of therapy too. They have play therapy. They have art therapy. There's
dance therapy.
There's all these different available options out there that weren't there before. So,
and so one resource for that, and many of you may already know this, but if you go to psychologytoday.com, they actually have a thing that says find a therapist, and you can put in your zip code and it'll give you all the therapists that are in your area. And not only that, but on the left-hand side, you can narrow it down to like, I want someone who works with adolescents, or I want someone who works with PTSD, or I want someone who works in art therapy. And you can narrow it down and find somebody, at least get some good leads.
You don't have to break out the yellow pages, sweetie.
No, I don't even know if anybody has the yellow pages.
I love the yellow pages.
But what I'll say to, you know, about this question that she has, it's a wonderful question. Like anytime we're saying, hey, I think I'm going to do something really radical and different, and maybe bring in someone new to talk to us about that. That's very brave, and it's very inspiring. And I think that just the fact that you know, these parents care enough to focus on themselves and then say, Yeah. Well, and she's like, I don't like this disconnection between me and my teenager. A lot of parents are like, that's what teens do. They don't talk to me. And it's like, well, there's a little bit of that, like normal developmental behavior. Like there's this middle place though, where it's like, do I feel like they're just coming home and going in their room and slamming the door? Speaking of parenthood, pulling a Gary.
Yeah.
Remember Gary and Parenthood?
We do. I don't know what they do.
They may not. But anyway, like there's this middle ground. And my daughters have Gary days. But if they were
Gary moments, Gary weeks, Gary summers.
But if they were Gary 24/7, I'd probably be like, we got to work on this together.
And Gary was like a reclusive, pissed off kid because his parents got a divorce and his dad was a piece of crap.
And because he was going through adolescence and he was thinking about sex all the time and he felt horrible about it and he was watching pornos and he felt bad. Mm-hmm. And then once Keanu Reeves started talking to him
Keanu Reeves says, that's what little dudes do.
That's what little dudes do.
And sometimes big dudes, let's be
honest.
And
he goes, and then he smiled. I didn't even know he had any teeth. So
homework, Rent Parenthood. It's good.
Yeah. It's so outdated, but it's still
it's
good.
It's not outdated.
It is. It's from
when you're sliding into first and you're feeling something burst, diarrhea. When you're sliding into second and you're feeling something heavy, diarrhea.
Diarrhea.
When you're sliding into third and you feel a juicy turd, diarrhea. Okay. You flip the bird, so I get to see turds.
You said juicy turd. That's gross.
You're gross.
Okay.
Oh. Dawn, you're up. What up?
Dawn's like, how do I follow that?
Yeah.
I was going to say, how do you follow that? Gosh. Okay. Oh, okay. Mine is kind of a heavy question. Sorry.
That's all right. We're ready.
It's regarding bonding with your kids differently and how that has made me feel. So my oldest is 7 and my youngest is 5. I bonded instantly with my youngest. And I don't even know what bonding is, but all I'm saying is that it's my relationship with him has practically felt effortless in the sense that I don't know. It's kind of hard to describe. Whereas with my daughter, I've kind of created this story around her that she's been difficult since the day she was born. And it's true. but it's we've had a really long, hard, tough road with her for a vast variety of reasons. We're on the verge of getting her clinically tested for ADHD to rule that out. We've seen a battery of doctors for a variety of physical issues that manifested because of her behavior problems. She's totally healthy now, but it's been years and years of struggle. Not knowing how to help her. She's currently waking up almost every night after an hour, about an hour after she falls asleep with night terrors. And occasionally she'll sleep, you know, through the whole night. They're not nightmares, the night terrors where they don't know, you know, what's going on and they're just pretty thrashing and crazy. And I've had a couple of doctors who think it could be her anxiety that is preventing her from doing that deep dive from sleep cycle 1 into sleep cycle 2, and she pops back up and that can. So anyway, so there's a lot. There's always been a lot going on with her, and she was breached. And I always started out by saying like, yeah, she was always different from day one, you know, she was breached and I had to have a C-section with her. And I even remember when she was born, I remember laying on the table and then when she was out, she was over there and I was like, oh, that's my baby. And it was weird. It was really weird. And I definitely think that I had I definitely had, I think they call it postpartum anxiety, which I found out about after. My doctor caught on that I was needing something. I would lay my head down at night and instantly would have waking nightmares of terrible things that I wouldn't be able to prevent happening to my kids. And I'd be like, stop it. It's not real. That's not happened. They're fine. They're safe in their room. Everything's fine. And so, you know, when I started opening up and telling her about this, so I had some stuff going on with me. But I had that with my second too. So, but I still didn't have that disconnect, the level of disconnection that I have with my first. And just to add this to make it even more messy, I've noticed my youngest, I've figured out that he wants to please me very badly, and that he, and that scares the poop out of me, because I easily fall into letting him do that. And I actually said to him for the first time the other day, honey, it's not your job to make mommy happy. That's my job. Only I can do that for myself. And because I said, are you trying to do that to make me happy? And he said, yeah. So, you know, I'm like, have I been living a lie? Am I not connected to him? Or is he just so clever at giving me what I need that I feel like I'm connected to him? So I'll stop there. It's a lot. But anyway, have at it.
Yeah, awesome. Have at it. Yep.
Thank you, Dawn. Oh, by the way, where are you from?
Believe it or not, I'm from Texas, but I grew up in Australia. I was okay. In second grade when my family moved there. That's
are you in Texas right now, or are you in Australia?
No, I live in Charleston now. So.
Oh, Charleston.
South
Charleston.
Carolina.
Oh, no kidding. All right, so you're all over. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. All right, I'm muting you.
Oh, do you want me to go?
I have some ideas, but I feel like I want you to go first, because Okay. Mine are more practical and yours are a little more deep, I think.
Yeah, well, you know, a lot of times things, when I'm listening, it's semantics, because I think that you're right. Like, I think what's kind of messing with your mind a little bit are these big words like connected or, you know, bonding or disconnected or, you know, not available or whatever the words are. And it's not because they're not true, or it's not because you're, you know, not being honest about how you're feeling. It's because they carry so much energy that if we're feeling more comfortable with one child and we start to say this thing to ourselves, like, I'm more connected with you, then you automatically assume that must mean I'm disconnected to the other. And that's not true. And I almost feel like a real piece of advice I could give you is really to notice your words and to change them, not for me and not for everybody else, but for your own internal sense of self, where you can say, because I can even tell you, Dawn, I know I don't know your family and or your situation or your children, but you are connected to both of your kids. That's not something you need to doubt. Even with the like you said, a breech birth that was cesarean. And I know that feeling where you look at a child and you're like, mine, you know, like there is, you know, it takes time sometimes to bond with children, especially, and I don't even want to use that word. It takes time to sometimes make that connection with a child. It's one of those things that nobody tells us, or if they do, we don't hear it loud enough when we give birth, is that all we hear is we're going to have this instant bonding situation and we're going to be like so in love. And that's not really the truth. Especially if there's been an intervention that's medical, not to our own fault. If there just was an intervention. And so that gets in the way of it too. And that's a whole process, and it can set us up to think we did something wrong, or that if we would have only, if she had been born a different way, then everything would be different. And all that's just a story. So I can just tell you that you are connected to your children. The difference is you have one child who maybe is different than you, maybe does not share a same personality type, and also may be a little more sensitive to the world than you. I don't want to die. She may be ADHD or have a diagnosis that helps her or supports her. And that's awesome. But she doesn't necessarily have to have a deficit. She doesn't have to be wrong. She doesn't have to be delayed, or it doesn't have to be something negative. She's just different. And she responds to the world differently. And then you have a son who maybe is more similar to you, or who has figured out the best way to get through life is if I'm like in tune with my mom. Mm-hmm. Like he has figured something out that is, we would probably, most people would call healthy, and you are aware enough to recognize, okay, I see this and it's great, but I'm not going to let him think this is the way of the world. I mean, you're already on it completely. Like, you should give yourself some props for that. Cause I think a lot of parents would be like, I'm going to roll with this. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, a lot of times when we have the child who pleases us, we, and again, this is going to sound pretty harsh, but we take advantage of it. Mm-hmm. We kind of say, well, this kid will back me up, or this kid will do it, or I can depend on this kid, but not on this kid. And those are the kind of stories you want to, you know, separate from. Your daughter is not like you, and she wasn't supposed to be like you, or, you know, she, our children, you know, and we talk about this all the time on the show, you know, this poem by Gibran, but they're not supposed, they come through us, but they're not us. They're like their own people. And our job is not to be like, how do I make you like this family? And it's more to be like, how do I know you and support you and understand you better? And that's what you've been doing. You've been helping her with her anxiety. You've been doing some testing so you can learn more about her. And I'm giving it to you through from this viewpoint, because instead of, oh my God, she's had so many problems and we've had to focus on all these problems, true, but you can shift it to, she's so different than me. I've dedicated my life to learning about this girl because she's my daughter and that's who I am in her life, and vice versa. And she, this gets so oversaid, but hopefully I can say it in a good way. She is your teacher. She is your soulmate. You know, our soulmates are not the people that we like mesh with, where we're like, they're perfect because they think everything I do. Our soulmates are the ones who test us, because they make our soul come alive. They're the ones who wake us up, you know, and we can have many soulmates. This is not just romantic. And she, you are connected to her, but it's not easy. Do you see what I mean? Like, I think we think connection means easy, and it's not. Like, Todd and I have these talks, and I would like to leave our children's names out of this, but we, about which, you know, which child is more like us or who we understand better. And I'm really always, when Todd uses certain words about, oh, I'm more connected to this kid, or I know this kid better, I'm always very like, be so thoughtful about your words. Because what our kids need to know is that no matter how different they are than us, and we can acknowledge the difference, we don't have to pretend. We don't have to be like, oh no, we're the same. We're different. But I am never going to not keep connecting to you. I accept you as you are. I don't look at you and think, God, why aren't you more like me? I look at you and think, I see you 100%. It's not always easy, but maybe I'm not always easy. You know, like I want to be accepted for who I am. So I guess I'm just trying to give you language. I can't change anything, especially night terrors. Oh my God, they're so scary. You know, if anyone here has had that experience, you could maybe get in touch with Dawn about, you know, what you've done. But I have a few parents I've worked with whose children have night terrors. And one of my best friends, her husband has night terrors. And it's a challenge. I do know that they come and go, meaning that it's not necessarily going to be a lifelong thing for her. You might be in the middle of it. But like you said, the more her anxiety, and she gets to understand her anxiety, like you said, sometimes you can fall into that REM sleep and it may not be a lifelong issue. Mm-hmm. But they are so scary, Dawn, aren't they? I mean, when they wake up like that and they don't know you're there. Mm-hmm. So that's like a whole subset. But so anyway, go ahead, Todd.
So I have a few different thoughts. One is, you know, you're like, bonding. What is bonding? I think one of the things that I want to share with you is, and you shared, you're vulnerable, so thank you for that, sharing some of your own postpartum anxiety.
Yeah, I had that postpartum anxiety too, just by the way. I had a lot of anxiety, but I called it baby blues, but it's all the same thing.
Right. So just the fact that you're vulnerable enough to share that tells me that you have a certain amount of self-awareness, but it seems like you're making, there's moments where you make up a story in your head about what something means, or you give it meaning that it doesn't belong, or you tell a story about this kid's I can connect with and that kid I can't. And these are all stories that you make in your head. So one resource I want to share, and if you want, you could email me afterwards, Dawn. I share this a lot with a lot of the guys that I coach when they're brain starts telling them stories. It's chapter one and chapter two of The Untethered Soul. The first chapter is called The Voice Inside Your Head, and the second chapter is Your Inner Roommate. I'll share those PDFs with you. It's just the first two chapters, but they're amazingly powerful. And it's just, it brings a level, it's not going to make any your anxiety stop, but it's going to bring a level of awareness to some of these stories that you're making up in your head. Because really all I'm trying to do for myself, for Kathy, for everybody on the team and my kids is to be present. And there's going to be moments where you're struggling with your seven-year-old, and just be present in those moments. The other thing that I thought of is how you're like, well, I can connect with my five-year-old, but not as easy with my seven. Some of it could be love languages. You and your five-year-old might be in alignment as far as how you give and receive love, and your seven-year-old may be different. And maybe you've already gone through that process, but if you haven't, I encourage you to, you know, just Google love languages for kids. And there's like even like very simple charts. You don't have to read the book. I mean, you can if you want, but simple charts of deciding or bringing into your awareness how your seven-year-old gives and receives love. So that was the other thing I was going to say.
To add to that, sometimes I think when our children are difficult, because I think Dawn's saying it's not just about connection, it's about that her daughter has had some struggles. Mm-hmm. And so it's hard to stay. It's so much easier with the other kid. It's like, you know, it's just so hard to stay present with a child who challenges us so much. And I think two things that we can put together, and they're paradoxical, but they can go together, is as much as this child challenges me, I'm not going to withhold any, meaning, I know you would never intentionally withhold love, but I think sometimes when a child challenges us, we're like, okay, I'm giving enough energy dealing with that, so I'm not going to do anything extra. This may be the child who needs a post-it note on her pillow at night, or a note in her lunchbox, and we may think, oh my God, I'm giving so much energy to this child already. So sometimes we talk ourselves into enough, you know, I've given enough. There really isn't ever enough with kids. And I don't mean we sacrifice ourselves, but sometimes the kid that's driving me the most nuts is the one I realize, like Todd said, with love languages, I have to figure out how they can feel my love. Because we have so much challenge sometimes that the love's not coming through, even if it's there. And so it's just little things. Like it's not like going and buying them gifts. It's just like I said, I've left post-it notes on their pillow, or I have put a note in their lunch. Those are things that I have done. Or with my older girls, I text them because they have phones now, but I text them funny things. And I say, this morning was brutal, but here's a cat dancing. You know, like these are just the ways that I kind of remind them, I see you, I know.
One other resource, and then I'm going to unmute it so Dawn can share anything.
I don't ever send you pictures of cats dancing. Does that make you sad?
No.
Do you want me to start doing that?
No.
Okay.
No, I don't need to see cats dancing. Headspace.
Oh, yeah.
We've talked about it, and they have a whole Headspace is an app that you put on your phone, and it's a meditation app, and they have a whole section for kids. And I sometimes, most kids aren't interested, but who knows, maybe your kid is, and they have free trials and all that, but it's specifically, you know, most of it's for adults, but they have whole different parts within the app. It's specific for kids, and they have these animations. It's kind of fun and you can keep track, and it's something that might be worth looking into.
And on top of Headspace is another thing for kids called Go Zen. And I also think Go Zen is good for adults. Lots of videos, that kind of thing. So those are just little things that may or may not help. Yeah.
Dawn, I am trying to unmute you. There you are. Feedback, thoughts, questions, comments?
So great. Thank you. That was really, really helpful.
Oh, good.
I don't know. I guess I just... I've never really actually said any of this to anyone before, beside my husband. So it just sort of feels really good to just put it out there. And just, I don't know, sometimes when you say stuff, it's more real than when you let it fly around in your head. And then sometimes it's not as scary too, because you can, especially when you feel other people saying, yeah, I've been there or whatever. So it feels like you can really move forward with it. The only other thing I wanted to say was this testing that we're leaning towards getting, it's clinical, like it's a very comprehensive. And I was saying to my husband, it's like I don't know what language my child speaks. Mm-hmm. Just tell me what it is. Is it Russian? I'll learn Russian. I don't know what it is. I have a lot of hope in this testing that, so I do view the whole ADHD thing in the same way. It might be a problem in the sense that it's preventing her from learning math right now, right. But I'm looking at it selfishly in my relationship with her. Like, I just need to know this. I just need to know who you are so that I can
yes,
be a great friend, parent, whatever. And that's, so I would have taken her yesterday if I could have, you know, but my husband's not as excited about getting, I'm not excited about getting a diagnosis either. He's terrified of it to the point of not wanting to get the testing done. I'm terrified of it because I think people have, oh, ADHD, that's a bad kid. You know, they have preconceived ideas. But for me, it's just, I just want to know who you are so that I can, I don't want to stand in your way. I want to at least walk with you. And I feel like there's been so much of this.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So. Yeah.
And I think there's value to a diagnosis, but I think a lot of times we as grownups give it too much merit. A diagnosis is just a word that might indicate something, but the labels is something that is just something to be made aware of. It is not...
Well, she's saying that. She's saying, I don't want the diagnosis so my kid can have a problem. I want if there is a diagnosis to be had, it's so then I understand how her brain works.
Yes.
And I can communicate with her. And, you know, one of my best recommendations, Dawn, and I'm so glad to have this resource now, is if you haven't listened to our podcast with Debbie Reber, she wrote a book called Differently Wired. Her son
I did.
Has, you did. Yes. Isn't she the best? And what I told her about that book, and I've told you guys I'm using it with my college students, is that book applies to all children, not children on the spectrum, not just children with diagnoses, all children. Like, we have to rethink the way we parent. We have to learn how to communicate with our kid. I think Debbie's work is so powerful. It's a paradigm shift for parents. And so, and you're already doing that. And just what you said is so important. I just wrote something the other day about just saying something out loud, you're like, oh, this is normal. And every single person on this call who has more than one kid can relate. And also that we all ebb and flow with it, you know, like depending on the year. Like, it's funny because now that my girls are older, I've gone through tough years with one of them. And then 4 or 5 years will go by and they're like totally chill. And then another one who I was like, oh, I thought we were like totally in, you know, the same person. We're not. And so these discussions we have allow us to kind of ebb and flow with them rather than to say, you're like this, you're like this, because they never really are. They're just kind of in the moment like we are. So you're, you know, Dawn, I'm right there with you. Everything you're doing.
And keep talking about it either to us on the Zen Talks or to the Facebook community or to girlfriends or therapist, whatever. But it's, you know, it's funny. I give that invitation to guys all the time is because guys are in their brain and they do not want to share anything with anybody because it makes them feel weak or something like that. And it is so healthy to let it out. So bless you for trusting this community to say that out loud.
Yeah, we love you.
And
we'll take care of you.
And just keep doing it, I guess.
Can we only have a few minutes? So can I say something or do we have a question?
There is not a question, okay. But Aaron wanted to know the author and the title.
Oh, sure. Deborah Reber. Or Debbie Reber, R-E-B-E-R. The title of the book is Differently Wired. And she also has a podcast called Tilt Parenting, T-I-L-T. It's a pretty high-ranked podcast, and it does really well. She has on a lot of big speakers, and she's just a really neat person. Like, if you read Debbie's book and you're like, oh, I like this person, you're right. She's just a really neat person. And I think she's going to be at our conference. Mm-hmm. So you might get to meet Debbie.
Before you move on to your last piece, we're thinking about, you know, we did the Loving What Is as kind of our book club, but it's fall now and we're thinking about doing another book together. Don't know exactly how we're going to interweave it, but so we want some feedback from you all. So the two books that we're thinking of, and I'll put them in the show notes. One is Debbie Reber's book, Differently Wired, and the other one is called...
On the Facebook page, maybe you can do that thing where people can vote.
Yeah, we'll do
a
poll.
Okay, Debbie Reber's book,
and the other one is called Fed Up by...
Gemma Hartley.
Gemma Hartley. both powerful books, very different from one another. And maybe that'll kind of give us the backdrop, you know, call it a virtual quarterly book club. And it's not like we're going to just dedicate a whole hour about the book, but maybe just something to kind of inspire us and to work on for the next, you know, 12 weeks or
so. Propel our thinking a little bit.
And then before you do it, sorry, I keep interrupting you. Our next Zen Talk, I'm going to be the next two Fridays from now kind of sucks for me because I have work. And then you're going to be seeing Glennon the Friday after that. So I think, don't quote me, but I think it's going to be on Tuesday, October 9th.
Don't quote him.
Don't quote me. So anyways.
Okay. So as we're finishing up, we only have about 1 minute here or maybe less, but I'm just going to say it looks like there's majority women on here. And I know that there's some guys in Team Zen, and I would love if they would hear this too. But if yesterday was a hard day for you for any reason, if you watched the testimony, and maybe you didn't, maybe you were separate from it, and that I honor that too. But I had a really tough day, and I'm still having a tough time. So just know you're not alone if you feel that way. And I tried to explain to Todd why I do feel the way I do. And it's hard to explain without going through my life story. It's not one thing. It's a lifetime of things. And I just feel like I keep getting told that it doesn't matter. And it's hard for me personally, and just for me personally, period. And then as someone who works with women who tell me they are sexually assaulted all the time, and then as a mother of daughters, I struggle. So I just want you to know, if you feel weird or sad, or you just feel like you don't even want to watch it, I understand. I feel weird and I feel mad and that kind of thing. So I just wanted to say that to you in case you were feeling that way and you weren't sure how to explain your feelings. I can't really explain either, except what I just said, and that we will see what happens. But I feel, I'm kind of at a loss for words. I'm just going to leave it there. And if you want to share anything on the Facebook page, or if you want to reach out, you know, through an email, cause you're struggling, I'm here for you and I'm feeling very similar. And that what they're telling us isn't true, you know, like you are worth, you are worth so much, and what you feel and what you've experienced, I believe you. And it's not for other people to acknowledge or to say, I believe you too. You just need to know that women have your back, and a lot of good men have your back too. Todd listened to me this morning, have my one of many breakdowns, and he understands, but he also knows he can't feel what I feel, and he doesn't try to. He's just going to stand with us, and there's a lot of men out there who are willing to do that. So this is not men against women or women against men. This is human beings who are awake. That's what it is. So so my nose is running, so I have to go get a Kleenex. I love you all. Take care of yourselves. Love the women in your life. Text the women. Tell them you love them. And stand and honor these good men.
And use the Facebook page if you want to have a you know, if you just want to get something out.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. Okay. Love you.
Adios, guys.